Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing the political situation in Somalia and the diplomatic role between Somalia and Ethiopia. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Matteo Gotteland. Dr. Gotteland is an analyst at the Conflict Research Consortium for Africa and a researcher in the history of international relations. Matt, I've read your excellent piece on this particular subject, and I'm very delighted to have you join us today. And I look forward to—
Thank you for having me.
—to an exciting conversation. Earlier this year, we had a guest following the MOU that was signed between Ethiopia and Somaliland. So we had a guest coming to discuss, and that particular episode turned out to be our best performing episode in terms of audience engagement and the interest it generated. So hopefully this will yield that level or more or better outcome. So following up on that MOU and following up on that situation, we've seen in Somalia recently, we've seen some situations and diplomatic role brewing between Ethiopia and Somalia. Can you tell us what this role is about?
It's about, for Ethiopia, it's about sea access. It's about, since last summer, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in Ethiopia is trying again to court his neighbors or threaten his neighbors into giving him some kind of sea access other than Djibouti, where for now most of Ethiopian exports are going through, about 85% at the time, I think. And it has not been going well. And so on the 1st of January, they have signed this MOU with Somaliland to regain access to the port of Berbera on the Red Sea. And Somalia, which considers Somaliland to be part of its territory, has been taken aback and has been considering it a violation of its sovereignty, of its territorial integrity, and there has been a threat of war for about 3 months and a half now between the two neighbors, which I insist before then had excellent relations, and now for about a few days there is this new crisis about Puntland, the northeast of Somalia, the most populated and the biggest region of Somalia, which is currently in a constitutional crisis, and this region wants to keep its autonomy, and there have been high-level bilateral talks between Puntland and Ethiopia And that's how the crisis has reached these current levels and this renewed threat of war between two neighbors.
Yeah, it does seem that Ethiopia is exploiting first it was Somaliland, and then we're seeing with this Punta region. So would you say Ethiopia is deliberately exploiting the crisis or the threat of secession or the quest for independence within Somalia? Or is it just, I guess my question is this, does it play a role in fueling that, or is it just opportunistic? Is it just exploiting those crises?
Ethiopia at this point is a bit short of options. There is the Lapset corridor to Lamu in Kenya, but it's a 1,000 kilometers railway. That has not been built yet. So it's been relaunched, but it's long term. There was this option to go to Port Sudan, but there is the war in Sudan currently for about a year. Ethiopia, our first choice was to court Eritrea. It was the most natural choice to get access to Massawa or Assab. But Eritrea has been called to Ethiopia's advances, and there have not been that many options left to Ethiopia if they wanted to gain sea access beyond Djibouti, except Somalia or Somaliland. But in Somalia, infrastructure is not built either to go to the Ethiopian border. And in Berbera, there is a road. There is a road to Ethiopian border, and that is the most the easiest option.
I guess we should start this conversation. I think we should let's take a step back and say, let's go to first of all, what is the situation of in that region, because there seems to be what is special in that region that has led to this kind of issue. So I think maybe a bit of some historical background would help us set the stage properly to understand the modern contemporary issue that is going on.
For Ethiopia, it has always been about sea access. They have sea access. They have a road and a highway to Djibouti, 750 kilometers, so much smaller than the planned railway to Lamu, Kenya. But prices have been going up, and they are trying to find an alternative. And Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed sees as his legacy that Ethiopia should regain sea access. Eritrea was part of Ethiopia until 1993. Assab and Massawa used to be the ports of Ethiopia. And Abiy Ahmed has said publicly that it was a mistake that Eritrea should be independent. And now he tries somehow to regain the management of a port or some other way to access the seas in Djibouti. They had an agreement since 2018 about Berbera, an agreement between the Emirati DP World, so Somaliland authorities and Ethiopia, but they let it fail in 2022. They had a 19% stake in Berbera. And now they are short of options. They have rekindled the issue last summer. They have offered a lot to Eritrea, which has been called to the Abiy Ahmed's advances. Now they threaten war, and Somaliland is is the easiest option now that Sudan is at war, Eritrea refuses, Kenya is far away and the railway isn't built. So they turn to Somalia and Somaliland.
Interesting. So what is the, so I guess let me first start from this. What is the international communities? First of all, let's look at the African Union, and then we could look, you know, beyond the African Union. Well, how are they intervening in this role? Are they playing any major role in mediating?
Well, individual countries have been backing Somalia, especially, of course, Ethiopia's neighbors, Eritrea, Djibouti, Kenya, which is Somalia's neighbor on the south, Egypt, which is at loggerheads with Ethiopia about the Renaissance Dam, also other foreign partners of Somalia currently in the fight against Al-Shabaab, the US, the EU, the UK, Turkey very importantly, and even later China. Whereas Ethiopia, which is supposedly an all-weather partner to China now since last October, has found no backing internationally. Now, as for African international organizations, the response has been mild, especially to Somali taste. IGAD has not directly condemned the violation of Somalia's territorial integrity and sovereignty, which Somalia has denounced. The wording from the AU, the African Union, has been a bit more stern, but the AU has a history of not going directly against Ethiopia, which is its host state. In the seat of the AU is in Addis Ababa. And even when Somalia went to the UN, to United Nations Security Council, there has been some resistance from the A3+1, the African group at the Security Council, which say this is an African problem, it needs African solutions, and it is not for the UN to deal with this issue. It needs to be resolved through the dialogue, which is also a point that's been raised by the African Union.
It does seem like let me just go a bit outside of this. I'll come back to this. What role does this play, this issue play, in terms of does it present a threat to Abiy Ahmed's government in Ethiopia, considering its own recent war, the internal division? Does it present an opportunity within, you know, group within Ethiopia to challenge Abiy Ahmed?
Abiy Ahmed has been always playing on this nationalist populist discourse since he's been prime minister, and it's not changing. The Somalia and Ethiopia, in their respective historical national narratives, are meant to be hereditary enemies, so to say. And he's playing on that, certainly, in his conflict with Mogadishu. Now, is it an opportunity for Ethiopia? I don't think Abiy Ahmed anticipated this much resistance from Mogadishu. He has enough on his plate already with the Amara rebellion, the Oromo Liberation Army, with the famine in Tigray. There have been recently clashes at the border between Yafar and the Somali regions in Ethiopia. he has enough to deal with as it is, without starting a new war either with Eritrea or with Somalia.
Yeah, it does seem that the whole region, the Horn of Africa. So if we're going to, even if we go to East Africa, we go to DRC, we see how Uganda, Rwanda, you know, the M23 rebels, there seems to always be that split between, or that spillover of conflict between countries within the Horn and East Africa. And there's always this interest. So we're looking at Egypt, for instance, who's got his own historical fight with Ethiopia based on the Renaissance Dam. We've also seen Kenya. So it does seem that these things are issues where people are driven by strategic interest. So I guess the question is, how does this show up, the insurgent groups within these regions? How does it provide incentive or provide an opportunity for them? How much incentive does it provide for them to manipulate or exploit that situation? Say for Al-Shabaab, for instance, it could be Al-Shabaab in Somalia, it could be,
Al-Shabaab has been trying to gain a foothold in Somalia, in Ethiopia. I'm sorry, it has been invading Ethiopia in the summer of 2002. They went pretty far within the Somali region. They went as far as 150 kilometers, I think, within Ethiopia before being repulsed. For Kenya, of course, it's also an issue. They have a white Somali population in the northeast, in the northeastern province, with attacks by Al-Shabaab already relatively often. And the question is whether this will affect Somalia's capacity to fight Al-Shabaab when there is currently an all-out war against Al-Shabaab, with the support of Ethiopia, between others, with the support of the African Union, Kenya, Uganda, Djibouti. And it's been going slower for about a year now. And there is a real question whether it can go on as effectively as it did in 2022 with this Ethiopian-Somali conflict looming.
So what? So I'll come back to that as well. So let's just go to Somalia now. What is this constitutional crisis? So we're looking at this that has sustained Somalia so far. What is the recent threat to the power sharing?
Well, until now, under the terms of the Provisional Constitution from 2012. Power sharing in Somalia has been on a so-called 4.5 clanic it's been an agreement between clans, between major clans of Somalia. Hassan Sheikh Mohamud is trying to change that. It has been his bid since he's come to the presidency. It is meant to be his legacy to finalize the constitution and to make Somalia a modern democratic state with universal suffrage, with lesser regional autonomy. And naturally, there is a pushback from the clans, the major clans, that are set to lose from this new situation, and from the major regions that have enjoyed a very large amount of autonomy since they were set up in the late 90s. Puntland being the first of them.
Okay. And We've seen that Africa is becoming like, basically become the new theater of all kind of conflict, and a lot of people are saying there's this new scramble for Africa, and also we've seen where we've seen Russia incursion in places of conflict. We've seen Central African Republic. We've seen in the Sahel. But I've not so much heard about Russia in this. Is there any Russian factor in here?
There is a temptation for Mogadishu to go to Russia. There had been talks, including after the war in Ukraine began. Now the arms embargo has been lifted by the UN, so it would be easier for Russia to train Somali army or to send war material. Whether they will do it or not is not entirely clear yet, but there has been a temptation, even though Somalia for now supports Ukraine and gets wheat from Ukraine. It has also gotten wheat from Russia. There is a very wide famine now going on in Somalia for years, driven by wars, driven by the insurgency of Al-Shabaab, driven by climate change. And so this is a very important issue for Somalia. I am not sure whether they will decide to turn to Russia or not. Until now, they have managed some sort of balance between sworn enemies. They had this support from both Egypt and Ethiopia, from Qatar and the UAE, the Emirates, from the US, the UK, the EU, but also from China. And they managed these sorts of balancing act, which Ethiopian actions for the past 3 months are starting to threaten.
It's quite amazing how, and I wanted to explain that dynamics beyond, especially the United States and UK. I wanted to know war strategic interest, because it's quite interesting that Somalia would, you know, garner such wide support from these different, if that shows, maybe shows the president, how will I put it now, shows the intelligence, or, you know, they be able to manipulate, you know, to get all these diverse stuff. But I wanted you to comment on the Western world, like for instance, the United States and the UK. What would be their interest in supporting Somalia? And, you know, Ethiopia usually would have, you know, some, what would be, I understand we did before the Egypt and Ethiopia. Egypt is like a natural ally of the United States. And but in Somalia, where we've seen Al-Shabaab, what is the strategic interest driving the West, particularly the United States and the UK? And what is the strategic interest? Okay, go on.
If you ask President Trump, there is none. That's why he pulled out the U.S. Special Forces from Somalia. But under President Biden, Somali president went to Washington and asked for U.S. help again. And he obtained it on the ground that Al-Shabaab was the most formidable terrorist threat on African soil, and that it could affect U.S. security. And that's the focus of the U.S. throughout Africa, really, at the moment. In Somalia, like in the Sahel, for example, their focus is more on fighting terrorism and weakening these groups' agency rather than on any strategic economic interests per se.
How about the middle powers? So we've seen particularly middle powers, you know, having a sort of like stronghold or foothold in Africa. Middle powers like Turkey and, you know, Qatar and all of this. What is their interest?
They're clearly taking the place of the US in Somalia. Turkey has been one of the first countries to establish relations, to re-establish relations with Somalia in 2011, I think, before Western capitals. And their cooperation has been wide-ranging. It's about trade, it's about education, it's about healthcare, it's about humanitarian assistance. It's about training the Somali police, Somali army. It's about banking licenses, mining licenses. Now they're interested in Somali oil, Somali gas. There should be around 30 billion barrels of oil on Somali territory. And that's also the reasoning behind the latest security arrangement between Somalia and Turkey regarding their territorial waters in the EEZ, meaning that Turkey is meant to take a 30% stake in resources from Somali EEZ for the next decade.
Interesting. So this is where it becomes very interesting. So in Africa, what we've seen, if you look at the history of Africa, the continent as a whole, we've seen where the borders are arbitrarily drawn. And but we've not seen in the last 60 years or more, so we've not seen so much of interstate wars. So rather, we've not seen where African countries are. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, we've not seen where African states are challenging these, colonial or European, imposed boundaries or state creation. And but what we've seen so far in many cases is where within the states, we see, groups, challenging, the states and looking for their own autonomy. But does this present, because it does look to me that, there could be a regional, this could have some kind of regional all at war if Ethiopia feels like, our economic interest is being threatened. And, do you see that possibility happening? Do you see this as a challenge of those arbitrary boundaries, and does this create opportunity for that kind of conversation? Because the Ethiopia does feel like he has the right to the sea. Do you see this possibility, one, of there being like a regional all-out war, or do you also see, two, the possibility of questioning or challenging that arbitrarily drawn boundary?
It is growing more possible by the day, sadly, and it is not common throughout Africa since the independences, but there have been already three wars between Ethiopia and Somalia since Somalia has been independent, all about this nationalism on both sides and this sense of threat that the other represents. You mentioned fights against colonial powers. In the view of many Somalis, Ethiopia is a foreign invader and is on the same footing as European colonial powers. And that has drawn Somalia to support Somali insurgencies within Ethiopia in 1964, to try to invade in 1977 in the Ogaden War. And then again, it provoked another war in 1982, which eventually provoked the crumbling down of the Somali state in 1991. And more recently, there has been the Ethiopian, US-supported Ethiopian invasion of Somalia in 2006 to defeat the Islamic courts. And this is very vivid in both Somali and Ethiopian memories.
Interesting. It does seem, how do you see all of this playing out? Because for me, especially in the Horn of Africa, more or less so in West Africa, we tend to see some form of drive for hegemonic drive, whether it be with and it's kind of like a consistent, whether it's Rwanda using the M23 rebel to invade either DRC or you know, whether it's Uganda, you know, coming to Sudan, whether it's the Lord Resistance Army operating from Sudan, and it does seems to be something that is prevalent in the Eastern Horn of Africa compared to West Africa. Can you explain these dynamics?
Historically, there's been Eritrean support to insurgencies in Ethiopia since 1993, which is a trend that has had been reversed during the war in Tigray recently for the past few years. Mm-hmm. Now, Ethiopia and Eritrea supposedly were allies, even though now they are at loggerheads about sea access. And the real threat for Ethiopia comes from Somalia. Somalia has a real potential for raising insurgencies within the Somali region of Ethiopia. And even within Somaliland, there has been already the region of Katumo seceding this last summer from Somaliland. With the help of Puntland, there is even though the Somali state is still weak, and Somali security forces are not in any state to fight anyone else but Al-Shabaab, there is still some potential for supporting insurgencies within Ethiopia and hurt the Ethiopian state, which is currently, as I said, they have their hands full already with the Amara rebellion, the Oromo rebellion.
So what are the efforts so far in resolving these issues from the international community, from the regional government, you know, or you know, what efforts have they put so far to resolve these issues?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Oh, I said, what efforts have they put so far in resolving this issue and preventing the impending war? What efforts at international level, also at the regional level?
There has been mainly mediation efforts from Djibouti and also Kenya, but mostly on the side of Somalia. They're mediating between Hargeisa and Mogadishu, not as much between Mogadishu and Addis. Until now, I don't see anyone trying to mediate between Somalia and Ethiopia directly, which will be needed, but Somalia so far has rejected any mediation efforts with Ethiopia until Ethiopia considers the MOU with Somaliland as null and void.
Interesting. So how do you see, what do you think, how do you think this is going to play out? Do you think there's going to be a diplomatic solution to this? Or do you think that, you know, it's the war is inevitable?
Before the crisis with Puntland, I would have said this would, the most probable would be that this dies out naturally, because Ethiopia had pushed herself into a corner, and there is not much she could do to enforce her agreement with Somaliland. Somaliland is in a very difficult situation itself currently. There is an election crisis in Somaliland. There is the cessation of Khartoum. There are also difficulties in Odal from the Gadabosi and the Issa clans, where in the lands where the Ethiopian naval base was supposed to be built. And this didn't look very steady an agreement. And with all the international support and threats of war and staunch resistance on the part of Somalia, there is not much that Ethiopia could have done to enforce an agreement with Somaliland. And I would have said, and this was going this way, they were saying, they were thinking about letting it go. But now that there is a constitutional crisis in Mogadishu, now that Puntland has said that they are willing to function as an independent country, even though they are still a region of Somalia, Ethiopia is exploiting this flaw in Somali strategy. And Mogadishu has grown more impatient. And now Somalia also has pushed herself into a corner because what they have said when they demanded from Addis that they closed their consulates in Puntland, in Garowe, and in Somaliland, in Hargeisa, was that they must close them within a week, or else what? We will find out when the ultimatum expires. Probably nothing. Maybe Somali support to insurgencies in Ethiopia and Somaliland. We are not sure. We cannot be sure. But it is questioning Somali deterrence, which was functioning until now. Based on Somali staunch resistance and its lack of will to negotiate or to make compromises on this issue.
It does seem very complex, and we can, you know, whichever way we look at it, we can look at it from the angle of, like Riley said, Somalia's inability to manage its internal crisis and be able to sort out all these divisions or quest for autonomy and be able to manage that. Also, because look at it, it's also history of, you know, interference within that region of, you know, countries interfering in other countries and supporting insurgent groups within that country. But how do you see, if we move forward, like if I come to like, let me ask the concluding question and ask you to take a very broad view and look at our different layers and say, project what is going to happen. What do you think might happen? How is this going to, different scenarios of how it might play out. If this happens, what's going to happen? And what could be the potential possible solution or way forward that you could, if we were to cover out, if we were to give in that job to prefer a solution to the problem, what would you, how would you advise on Ethiopia, how would Ethiopia guarantee its own economic survival in terms of access to routes? How does Somalia guarantee, deal with its internal crisis and make sure, you know, its different clans and components are happy? What would be the solution do you prefer?
Well, naturally, there is an outstanding issue within Somalia, within Somaliland, about power sharing between the clans, about whether or not there should be universal suffrage. But I doubt that Mogadishu would back down. They want this modern democratic functioning state. It's about strengthening the state they have suffered since 1991. From anarchy, from a failing, completely failing state, and now they are trying to rebuild it. but it comes at the expense of the clans and the regions. And of course, it should be done as much as possible within within reason, by talking to the major clans, by talking to the major regions, which enjoyed autonomy for about 25 years now, which have fought al-Shabaab on their own for about 25 years now without the help of Mogadishu. Mogadishu is here now. Mogadishu is helping. Mogadishu is raising support from external partners. But it would be best, of course, if they sat at the same table and managed to talk and find a compromise in everyone's interests. Because right now, whatever happens, this plays into the hands of al-Shabaab. Regional autonomy to the point of almost independence, clanic rivalries, tensions with Ethiopia. Al-Shabaab is playing a lot on Somali nationalism and the Somali national narrative that paints Ethiopia as the forever invaders, the forever Christian invaders. And they need to put a stop to that as reasonably as possible, to talk and to find some sort of compromise in the interest of Somalia, in the interest of the region, and to focus their efforts, of course, on fighting al-Shabaab.
How about, I think that's the last question, but you didn't speak on, how about Ethiopia? How does Ethiopia, but it does seem that Ethiopia has a very legitimate, need. He has to survive economically. If he needs access to the sea, what would you advise? How do you think he should go about,
Ethiopia survives Ethiopia survives just fine for now. The issue is not whether they can export through a port on the Red Sea or on the Indian Ocean. They are already exporting to Djibouti. The issue is whether they can export through one port and be imposed higher tariffs by the Chinese, which now are managing the port of Djibouti, or whether they can find a second or third option. But honestly, it is from the point of view of Addis from Abiy Ahmed, it is a vital interest, but Ethiopia's survival is not at stake. Ethiopia's economic survival is not at stake. They are already exporting through Djibouti, and it went down from 95% to 85%, which means they are already exporting through other channels, including through Somaliland. And if you ask Djibouti, they would answer that the full potential of their port has not been used by Ethiopia yet. So this is not a matter vital enough to risk an all-out war with Eritrea, with Somalia, to put the region in this place when there are insurgencies in Amhara, insurgencies in Oromo. There has been a genocide in Tigray with currently a famine that has been widely ignored by Addis, which is making things even worse. And further conflicts that are either simmering or that have not fully been resolved yet, including in the West. And so I think the focus for Ethiopia should be on finding some common ground internally to come together as a state, to build a nation, which has not been done as yet, to go towards accountability and ultimately reconciliation with the different insurgencies with Tigray, because of course TPLF has committed war crimes as much as the national army, the Ethiopian national army, but Tigray civilians have been have been the victims of a genocide between 2020 and 2022, and this needs to be addressed. Like Somalia, they are an unstable, fragile state, and the focus should be on strengthening the state, strengthening the nation, and not when I mean strengthening, I'm not saying that they should wipe down the insurgencies and ignore their demands, but rather come together and find out what they want to do about their common state, their community, the fate they have together. Whether this should be about forever wars, about wiping out entire minorities, or if they want something more, they have tried this view under Haile Selassie and later that it should be some sort of that the state should be Amara, the state should be Christian, and that everyone else should have to come in line. They have tried since 1995 to give their voices and to give a very large autonomy to the minorities, to the peoples, nations, and nationalities of Ethiopia. Until now, neither approach has worked. And this is the real stake for Ethiopia right now, is to know where to go next as a nation, I think.
Okay, that's quite interesting. Perhaps that explains why there is little to no support for Ethiopia. And it could also be a question where all of these is to divert attention away from its own internal crisis and what it needs to deal with. But anyways, Dr. Gutterland, thank you very much for coming on board today. Thank you for your very, very
deep
insights into this ongoing situation. We are very grateful, and once the episode is out, we would be in touch, and we would be grateful if you could help to promote it among your network, and hopefully we'll be able to get you back on if this situation further develops, see how it develops, to come and see how it's going to pan out. But for now, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining in today. Join me to thank Dr. Martin Gutterland for his very rich insight into the Somalia-Ethiopian diplomatic role. I pray you join us next week. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share our videos, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.